Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show.
From Los Angeles, I'm Justin Savakis.
And I'm Zach Birchie, and, well, this is the Endcast. We're on our, what is this, like our ninth episode?
I thought it was eighth, but...
Whatever, who cares? Yeah. So, obviously the all-encompassing thing right now is the new season of anime, which has begun as of about a week ago today.
And has monopolized all of your time.
Yep. I sleep about 5 hours a day. The rest of it is spent editing and posting previews, and also, of course, watching stuff myself. Now, I've gotten to maybe five shows, but...
How many bottles of vodka is that?
Two and a half. But I'm curious, because you've been watching some of this stuff too, so I'm sorry.
I have, but I've been really, really choosy. I've only been watching the stuff that gets 4 stars or better from any of your reviewers.
Okay, so what have you been watching?
Well, the first show I tried to watch was Book of Bantora, which, I'm sorry, is terrible.
I got through about 7 minutes and said, fuck this.
It's really, really confusing. It's really dopey. The writing is really bad. It thinks it's really important and world-shattering, and it's just really clumsy. There's some terrible CG. Honestly, I mean, the translation for the most part was okay, but there's some really weird translation choices.
Yeah. Crunchyroll's kind of like that, though.
Well, you know, I understand they're doing a lot of shows really fast, so quality, you know, we're basically getting speed subs, but I actually knew the translator for this one.
Right.
And so I asked him about this, and he's like, oh yeah, that's not how I translated it. The licensor must have asked for that to be changed. So my favorite thing is they translated, there's a name of a church that's pretty short in the original Japanese, but they translated it as Church of Drowning in God's Grace. Mm. And whoever changed it clearly just didn't care and just did a fine replace over the whole thing. So you have sentences like, the Church of Drowning in God's Grace's boat is very full of such and such. And it's just so clumsy and clunky. I'm just like,
The minute I saw, I think I just have I'm allergic to self-important anime wizards. Somebody wearing a stupid, like, cloak and casting spells or whatever the fuck, and it's all very serious. It's just boring. Like, I was just bored by it. Well, librarians, who gives a shit?
Some weird, or somebody, I don't know how someone realized this, because I never would have figured this out, but apparently all of the side characters in Book of Bantora are named after kind of badly Japanized versions of characters from Neverending Story.
Really?
Yeah. Why someone would do that, I have no idea. Maybe just, I think it just shows the complete lack of creativity going on here and how desperately they're just trying to cover that.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty crappy. Anything else?
I watched To Aru Kagaku no Railgun, a certain scientific railgun. Uh-huh. I really like this show, but it made me feel guilty because it's kind of obsessed with preteen girls' chests. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it's really well animated, great action. And I genuinely have no idea where it's going to go, and it's just kind of fun.
Huh. So if you had to give that a rating?
I'd give it a 3.5, 4.
Okay, that's cool. Maybe I'll check that one out. I haven't... I saw it was a sequel to something.
So. Well, it's a spinoff, so...
Or a spinoff.
I haven't seen their original, but I'm told I should, so...
I didn't really want to put the effort in. And anything else? You watched Kobato, right?
Yeah, I watched Kobato, which people like because it's Clamp and it's pretty, but I don't know. Clamp stuff usually leaves me cold.
It just in general?
In general, yeah. Their stories just kind of seem lightweight and wispy, and they don't really have much to do with reality, and I'm just like...
Well, this is based on 15-page stories out of New Type magazine, so...
Oh, well, even more substantial.
It is, from the get-go, a minor work. I mean, I'm not the world's biggest Clamp fan. I liked all their stuff pre-Tsubasa. Like, I liked most of it pre-Tsubasa. Tsubasa just got too stupid and confusing and weird, and it was too much to take in. Like, you had to read that, and then you also had to read Holic. And, too much.
Kobato is really saccharine, and, you know, it has that Call Me Moe thing going on where, like, girls kind of look off wistfully and are cute and there's nothing, no real big conflict anywhere.
I will say this, and this is going to be a little bit of a derail. We will get back to the preview guide. The dog, the little blue dog, sounds like SoftBank Dog. It reminds me of SoftBank Dog, which is the greatest thing ever. And I showed you these and you liked them too.
I love them so much.
If you go on YouTube, check out, just type in SoftBank Dog, look up the subtitled SoftBank Dog commercials. They are the greatest thing. It is the greatest thing. Anyway, everybody check out SoftBank Dog.
Yeah.
So back to the preview, but I didn't, I mean, I got about 5-7 minutes in,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, too much. I just didn't want it.
Yeah, just too saccharine. I watched Nyankoi.
I didn't watch that.
I really like Nyankoi. I think it's my favorite show of the new season.
Really?
It's, did you ever see, Midori Days?
That's the one with the guy with the hand, right?
Right.
The girl on his hand, yeah.
Just the kind of just completely out there, but pretty decently written comedy, romantic comedy.
Mm-hmm.
It's on that level. It's about a guy who gets cursed into hearing what cats think and being able to communicate with them. But if he doesn't cure himself of the curse, he turns into a cat eventually, and he's horribly allergic to them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a nice twist, and it's really fun, and it made me laugh out loud a few times. So, really like it.
Call me when they make a bunny version.
All right. And last but not least, I watched Letter B, Tegami Bachi.
I watched that, too.
What do you think?
Boring. I guess I'm just easily bored. I read the comics.
Oh, you did?
And, yeah, and the comics are beautiful. I mean, the artwork is amazing, and it's been really simplified for this, just to make it animatable. And frankly, like, I just prefer the pacing of the comic. Like, I'd rather just... This is one of those situations where I'd rather just read it.
The first episode was crammed so full of exposition and so much world-building by way of explanation.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, well, this is what this does, and it's this because of this mysterious thing.
And everyone telling each other things they already know. Yeah.
Exactly. Like
lazy exposition.
Some guy talking to his sister going, as your brother, I will, dot, dot,
God,
dot.
God, I hate that shit. Well, as you know, I am your mother. Yeah, I do. Thanks for the reminder.
It has some really interesting ideas, and I think it might go somewhere. But yeah, this first episode is kind of lame.
I watched Inuyasha, the final act.
Why would you do that?
I saw the whole original show.
All 160 odd episodes?
Yeah, I mean, I was living with somebody at the time who was really into it. We would just sit down and watch it together. And it was okay. I mean, I never really thought it was that great. And towards the end, there were just too many fucking characters. Just too big a cast. Too much going on.
Yeah.
And I started losing interest because it just seemed like a big load of bullshit, like most Rumiko Takahashi series after the first 20 episodes or so.
Right.
This was totally a reminder of why I stopped caring about anything that was happening, because I had really forgotten everything about the end of that show, except being pissed off that they didn't kill the bad guy after 200 freaking episodes.
Right.
So this was just like, hey, remember these melodramatic monster people yelling at each other for 24 minutes? Well, here's more of that. It's, eh, I... No, thanks. I won't get back into it.
I had no interest in Inuyasha when it came out. It came out during one of my down periods in anime, and I just, after I got back into it, everyone was like, God, this show is going nowhere. I'm like, well, I'll check that one out.
Yeah. Well, what's confusing to me is they have an end point for this. It's only 26 episodes.
I thought it was even shorter. I thought it was like 13.
No, it's 26. Okay. They're covering 18 volumes of manga. It's 18 volumes, and I noticed that this episode seems super condensed, like they were packing a ton of shit into this one episode, literally leaping from character to character. If they're going to cram 18 volumes of manga into 26 episodes, that is going to be a nightmare show to watch. Like, a nightmare. Every episode's going to be just pure exposition. The fights are going to be 2 seconds long.
Well, I guess I'm glad I set that one out.
The one I did watch that I actually really enjoyed was Sasameki Koto.
Yeah, I've got to watch that.
Good stuff. I mean, I am just not that familiar with the Yuri genre. I never really got into it. But it's a nice little melodrama and likable characters. It was just really quality.
Decently realistic from an emotional standpoint?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure it's cliched. I mean, I just am not familiar with Yuri cliches.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it seemed pretty good. But then again, the reaction I'm getting from Yuri fans is that they like it.
Okay.
So I assume I'm not completely off the mark on it. But it's very dignified. It's quiet. It's a lot of the tinkly piano and leaves rustling and all
that
stuff.
There's not that much Yuri out there, so I mean...
I don't think there's a lot of Yuri like this. There is no fan service. Not a drop. It is completely played straight.
Wow.
I mean, unless just the idea of two girls being in love is enough to be like, whoa, like, it's not fan service-y at all. It's played totally respectfully and straight. Well, not straight. Another thing I noticed, a lot of people, like the shows that we're reviewing, that the critics are reviewing, that are getting the highest marks are only available, you can only watch them via fansub. Everything else, and it's wonderful, we have 18 shows on Crunchyroll, that is awesome. I hope next year it's everything.
Right.
Or in the spring it's everything. You mentioned on the show last week that the when you're looking at what's on Crunchyroll, you're kind of looking at what got passed on by Funimation right. at this point.
Yeah, basically, you know, what happens is Funimation still pays money. Mm-hmm. Crunchyroll usually doesn't pay money up front, but, you know, you get back end, you get, you know, a share of the ad revenues. And so, obviously, everyone's going to go to Funimation first mm-hmm. and wait for them to say yay or nay before they, you know, kind of go to Crunchyroll and, you know, pee in the pool.
So is it irresponsible then to because I could see this turning into a thing where the fans are like, oh, it's not on Crunchyroll, that means it's going to get licensed. Like, I could see that becoming kind of an irresponsible automatic go-to thing. Like, just because it's not on Crunchyroll right now, that doesn't necessarily mean it's got a really good shot at getting licensed.
Yeah, I mean, obviously some people in the, you know, on the production committees for each show have something to say about it. And if one person just doesn't get streaming, well, that just means it's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, and an interesting thing is that Crunchyroll has Fairy Tail, which is probably the highest profile show.
But only for a month.
It's only for 1 month?
Yeah, each episode only stays up for 30 days and then gets pulled down.
Oh, okay.
And it's subscriber only.
Yeah, I noticed that. And I don't have a problem with that. They're trying to make money. I mean, right. that company needs to try to make money.
Right.
But
I have a feeling that wasn't Crunchyroll's thing. I don't know. I haven't asked them. But I have a feeling that was probably... That's probably some company, the licensor, trying to kind of, you know, bridge the gap between the two approaches. Mm-hmm. Well, Funimation might still want this, but they won't want it if Crunchyroll already has it. So then maybe we can just kind of shorten their window,
yeah.
make it subscriber only.
Is there the sense that when it shows up on Crunchyroll, it's devalued?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Because I think there's a general consensus that everyone eventually is going to be watching streaming anime mm-hmm. as their primary means of watching it. Some people will still want to buy DVDs, but chances are the first time it's available will always be streaming. Funimation obviously wants that big premiere slot. Mm-hmm. They want to have that under their umbrella. That's where all of the main viewers come in, is right at the beginning when mm-hmm. it first gets posted. And if it's already up, by the time they get it, they kind of miss that big hurrah that they get by premiering it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's kind of damaged goods by that point.
Right. And then there's a sense that why am I going to buy a DVD box of a show I didn't love and I just watched it all online anyway?
Exactly. I mean, every show will have its share of people that really love it and its share of people that just thought it was meh. Mm. People who thought it was meh will watch the stream, maybe to the end, but they're not going to buy it.
Right.
And so you want to buy the shows with the biggest possible amount of people that want to own it permanently.
Yeah. I mean, like, provided it doesn't get retarded, I'll probably watch Sasameki Koto all the way to the end. There's no way I would buy the DVDs. I mean, I like it, but I'm not going to watch it again. You
right.
know?
But on the other hand, if I love Nyan Koei to the point where if it maintains this level of quality throughout, I'd probably pick up a cheap DVD of it at some point.
Yeah, yeah. So the other thing I kind of wanted to bring up and just briefly touch on this was that it was announced that the FTC announced new rules for bloggers that get free stuff. And basically, they need to establish... the basic rule is they have to know what's really going on with your blog. So if a company sends you a product, you have to disclose that they sent you that product and thus you are reviewing it. What it's really targeted at is these, and I'd never really heard of these quote unquote mommy blogs, where they are basically shills.
Oh, it's not just mommy blogs. There's a ton of these. The electronics blogs, I'll bet a few of them have this problem too, where they get like a permanent $5,000 new piece of gear
mm-hmm.
and it's just a gift and they get to keep it.
Right.
And that.
Could taint the content.
Well, even more than that, there is outright pay for play.
Right.
In the blog space. I mean, there is obvious, hey, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, here's $5,000 in cash. That happens.
Holy crap.
You know,
there's a lot of people going, man, how do I get in on this right now?
Right? Well, not anymore.
Yeah.
It's just, I think as journalism slowly moves towards blogs, and that's just kind of the pattern that everything seems to be going to these days, there's a huge risk involved because all these blogs don't necessarily have journalistic ethics and...
Well, they're not journalists.
Exactly. So you don't have that assurance that, oh, I'm writing for the New York Times, New York Times has strict rules on compensation with editorial reviews. There is none of that. So the FTC is trying to address it. Whether or not this is in any way enforceable is another story.
Yeah, I don't think it's enforceable. But the reason I bring it up is because, of course, the anime blogosphere kind of went apeshit when this was announced. Because it's like, oh, well, I get screeners from Funimation and I get books from Del Rey. Do I have to put it at the bottom of the page that I got it? And then there were some people that got really weirdly self-righteous. Well, I disclose. Like, I tell when I get... Yeah, okay,
gee,
well,
I wonder who that was.
Aren't you great? Well, actually, it was somebody who... it was a blogger who openly sells the screeners, the books she gets on the front. So, like, she goes, oh, I got this book from Del Rey. You can buy it. You can buy my copy of it that I got for them for free for $4 or $5.
If I was Del Rey, I would totally cut her off.
Which is that... To me, that's a much bigger problem. I mean, if you're selling the stuff you get, wouldn't that be a bigger problem than disclosing that you got it? I mean, I don't, personally, frankly, I don't care. Like, you're talking about pennies, first
yeah,
of all.
One unit.
Yeah, it's not a big deal.
I mean, I remember back in the day they used to have an intern scribble out all the, you know, barcodes so that you couldn't resell them.
Right, and whatever, that's fine. This is such a minor thing in the anime world. You're talking about really nothing.
Yeah.
But you don't get to get self-righteous. Well, I tell people when I got a screener, oh, well, good for you, and, you know, then you're also doing this totally shady looking thing on the side. But I honestly don't think anime bloggers have anything to worry about for this.
This is so clearly not about us.
Yeah, I don't think it's ever
gonna... Nothing involving anime or manga, probably even media, because, you know, it's a 30-cent DVD-R at best for most of the time.
Well, it's funny, because in some of the interviews they were bringing up hypotheticals, and it was a lot of book bloggers, people mm-hmm. who write about the books. And it's like, well, they take that pile of books down to the bookstore and sell them. It's like, well, first of all, there aren't a lot of other ways to get rid of them. Second of all, oh no, they made $7.25.
Who's getting $7.25 for a used book?
Yeah,
I'm lucky to get a buck.
Yeah, it's totally, totally stupid. I mean, what we do with our screeners is we give them away at our panels.
Yeah.
And generally when I send stuff out, the company sends stuff to me and I send it to our critics, they just keep it.
Yeah, I've kept stuff if I like it.
Yeah, I don't see what the big deal is. I really don't. That's why when I was reading this law, I was like, this is really stupid, and it's aimed at something that I don't think is a problem.
The other thing is, the Federal Trade Commission doesn't have, like, a direct enforcement division. They enforce by lawsuits.
Oh.
They're not going to sue you for keeping a $20 DVD. Yeah. They're just not.
Excuse me, where did you get that copy of Big Wind Up? Knocking on the door?
And especially, you know, because chances are you're not raking in the big bucks if you're an anime blogger.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there are bloggers
we're
there that are making...
We're professionals and we're not making the big bucks.
There are bloggers out there making six figures.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, the more just successful, like mommy blogs and tech blogs, and Gadget makes a ton of money, and they're technically bloggers.
Yeah.
We are not that.
Right.
They are not going to come after us. This is like the FBI raiding your house because you copied a tape from Blockbuster.
Right, that's silly. Okay, well, we've talked probably long enough. We should probably bring our guest in.
Yep.
Okay.
Take it easy on that slate board, Freddy. Be careful.
You too, Dad. Don't forget to sing a song of seatbelt safety.
Huh? Oh, yeah. The seatbelt connected to the frame zone. The lap strap goes across the hip bone. The shoulder strap angles or the chest bone.
So hear the words of the law.
Those belts, those bones, those seatbelts.
For safety's sake, wear seatbelts.
I'll properly wear seatbelts and heed the words of the law.
Sometimes kids have to remind grown-ups, yabba dabba buckle up.
We're back. Our guest today, you may or may not know him from his show, Anime World Order, which is just animeworldorder.com, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, so our guest is Daryl Surratt. Is it Surratt or Surratt?
It is indeed Surratt.
Okay.
I say it every episode of the show, and people still pronounce it Surratt, which is kind of odd.
They're trying to be European-y. okay, so we wanted to have you on the show. Now, you are sort of infamous for, and I think you kind of shared this a little bit with Justin, really focusing on stuff from the 80s and 90s. Is that something you would agree with?
Actually, no. I don't know if I would be infamous for really focusing on stuff from the 80s and 90s. I think, rather, I kind of watch everything.
Yeah, but you're infamous for focusing on really bad stuff from the 80s.
Maybe.
You cannot argue with that.
I can't argue that I focus on really bad stuff as well as what I consider really good stuff, to the point where I can't really tell the difference between the two anymore. It's kind of all just either one extreme or the other. It sort of loops around and, you know, the two meet up somewhere.
Well, we are talking to a man who unironically goes to Uwe Boll movies and...
I did indeed see In the Name of the King, A Dungeon Siege Tale in the theater.
And you didn't go like, oh, this is going to be bad. Like, you went. Like,
no, we went.
To enjoy it.
we experienced it, all right.
So, I mean, but the reason I bring it up is because there is sort of, I mean, agree or not agree, I think you belong in this crowd of people. There is a certain group of anime fans that tend to focus on the older stuff. It's, you know, people like you, Mike Toole, I think would be one of those, Justin. Do you think that that sort of fan is becoming rarer and rarer, and do you think it's even possible to create that kind of fan today?
I certainly think it's possible to create that kind of fan today, but to go to your first part of the question, I think it is also becoming rarer and rarer because of the nature by which our anime fan hobby in 2009 is pursued. Nowadays, it's a very internet-based fandom, as it were. Back when we were getting started, everything was sort of snail mail, tapes, going to clubs, going to meetings. Nowadays, if you want something, it's on the internet somewhere, or you can go to a store and buy it. And so, you're limited by that. If you go into a Best Buy, they're not going to stock anime titles that are, you know, to use your industry term, catalog. They're going to have the latest and the greatest. Similarly, if you're following anime on the internet, people are going to be focusing on what's out in Japan this week, this month. There isn't quite as much discussion as far as even a year ago, what was on. And that's part of what the Anime World Order podcast, when we started it 3 years ago, tried to sort of turn the tide a little bit on that. We still focus on things that come out that are new, but since we also focus on things that are not new, we kind of have this reputation as being the old guys. None of us are especially old, but I think the way to make those kinds of fans that would go back and watch those things is simply to just make them aware that it even exists. I think if you just put it out there and say, hey, this was made, this is cool, and you can see this now, people will check it out.
So if you say, like, you were going to introduce a new fan, somebody who's just getting into this, to the older stuff, is there like a gateway title? Is there like one show or like a movie that you would say, okay, look, yes, this all this shiny new stuff is great, but hey, there's two decades, 3 decades worth of shows out there that you've never heard of. Check out how cool they can be, even though they might look different from your modern animes. Like, would there be like one like thing you could point to that would be a starting off point for getting someone interested in the older stuff?
I don't think there's necessarily one, which is why I prefer the shotgun approach. In fact, this weekend I'm going to be at an anime convention here in Florida, which is where I am, ExpCon in St. Augustine, and one of my panels is pretty much 2 hours devoted to exactly that topic. It's basically showcasing strange anime that people may not have seen, but either were popular once or just are good shows that don't get the attention that they should get.
Give me an example.
Example, Akira. Every convention I go to and I do a panel, I say, just out of curiosity, who here has never seen Akira? And about half the crowd will raise their hand because that movie is from about 20 years ago. And that was a big deal when I was coming up as an anime fan. That was like the movie everybody saw. Mm-hmm. Even people who weren't anime fans knew about that one because it was in Blockbuster Video. But nowadays, people aren't going to see that movie. They have no means of really going out and encountering it unless they already know about it and purchase the Blu-ray, which I highly recommend. It's awesome. And otherwise, it's just another thing on the shelf or thing to download.
Well, one thing I've noticed a lot of times is that people will give old stuff a chance. They just won't seek it out by themselves because there's just so much of it, and they know that most of it was garbage back in the day, too. If you're actually actively showing someone something and you come at them, and they're already anime fans, and you come at them with the point of view that's like, this is really good stuff, it's sort of like showing an old movie to someone, where they won't probably go check it out on their own, but if there's something about it that is worth digging up, is worth seeing, they'll probably say, okay, well, this is an old classic, I should probably check it out.
Certainly. I think the eternal question on every anime fan's mind, regardless of your status of a quote-unquote newbie or quote-unquote old-school or old-timer, the big question everyone wants to know is, what anime should I watch next? And there's just so many titles to choose from that it's impossible to simply watch everything. Maybe that was possible back in the 90s. You could conceivably watch every U.S. release that came out. But even now, with the amount of U.S. material being curtailed, you still can't watch everything that comes out. And to say nothing of the 60 or so new shows that just started in Japan, you guys are knee-deep in the preview for the upcoming season. It's very difficult to watch everything that's coming out. And so you need someone, you need some sort of guide to say, hey, go watch this one and this one and this one. And maybe you won't like everything, but you'll probably like at least one. I think that's a good way to get people to watch things.
Side topic, are you watching anything new this season?
I actually am watching some new things, but most of them are actually continuations of previous things. Like Astro Fighter Sunred is a second season of that. Darker Than Black, there's a second season of that. I'm watching those right now. I also will be very interested in watching the Romance of the Three Kingdoms anime once it actually starts. Not the all cute girl version of the Romance of the Three Kingdoms, but the actual real one.
Okay.
So there are certainly a few shows. I mean, last season, the main one I was really watching was Shin Mazinger Z, or Z, if you would.
That brings me
ended pretty well. I hope they make a sequel.
That brings me to the next thing I wanted to talk to you about. You have also a reputation for being really into super manly shows. Like, you don't seem to have much patience or tolerance for anything that's cute or girly or... I've seen you really go off on the moe stuff many a time. So what is it with the manly stuff, Daryl? Are you compensating for something?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've got a micro penis.
But seriously, what is it? Because you're totally into, like, Fist of the North Star, the Go-Go, anything with potato-headed guys punching each other, super robots. I mean, what about that stuff specifically attracts you?
I think it sort of ties into a sort of general interest I've got in these genres such as the Western, the Samurai movie, the Kung Fu movie, the 80s Golden Harvest Hong Kong action. Mm-hmm. The sort of hard-boiled action hero is sort of a dying breed. Maybe it's considered a little quaint, a little antiquated, but it's also... you know, sort of been steeped in a lot of years of tradition and, you know, being cool. And it's also what I sort of watched coming up as an anime fan. I mean, Ninja Scroll, it wasn't really my favorite, but that's sort of the embodiment of this type of anime, the hard-boiled action hero. Perhaps the Cyber City 080808 is maybe a better example. But I think the thing about Fist of the North Star...
I'm sorry, dude, that show was fucking terrible.
You don't like Cyber City?
I worked on that DVD. It's mediocre at best, but it's really just kind of pulpy and...
Hey, do you remember when they released Cyber City on that weird CD format that you were supposed to watch on your computer?
Oh, yeah, the VCD. It was basically a VCD, except crap.
It was so bad. The used bookstore near me had a pile of those things.
We used to blow those out for $1 each at conventions.
Eventually just started giving away the, you know, Overfiend or whatever it was for free. But no, I mean, to go and explain, like, why Fist of the North Star, which, if I may go on as an aside, a couple weeks ago on a previous episode of the Ancast, I made a quick little joke. It said, nobody cares about Fist of the North Star. In defense of Fist of the North Star, for the last 20-some years since it's been on, there's still been pretty much every year new games, new movies, new manga. We've still got new anime coming out for Fist of the North Star 25-some years after the fact. It's popular everywhere else in the world, just not in America.
I've had people from Japan, Daryl, tell me that no one buys Fist of the North Star stuff anymore.
That's fascinating. Why do they keep making it if nobody buys it? Someone's got to be buying it.
You might be exaggerating exactly how much stuff is really being made.
Yeah, I mean, there's not that much stuff. Maybe like a game here and there. But, you know, I think there's a couple factors at work there. It's probably like people keep trying to restart Garfield and keep trying to restart, you know, right. Looney Tunes. They pay a lot of money for these licenses and they're like, damn it, I better milk this for something.
It's possible. I mean, we did get at least, you know, 4 or 5 new Fist of the North Star anime in the past few years, but in any case, I think like the modern shonen, you know, whether it's...
trying to step in front of a tray.
I'm sorry.
It's all good.
I was trying to answer your question, but the modern shonen action adventure genre is kind of the most popular among anime fans, whether you like Bleach or Naruto or One Piece or DBZ or Kenshin, or, you know, you can just go down the line and name these shows. And I think if you were to say, well, where did this really kind of codify and, you know, be established? Fist of the North Star is kind of it as far as establishing, like, these are the genre tropes, these are the character archetypes and such. And so I'm kind of interested in it in that perspective. I mean, when I was first becoming an anime fan, I hated that movie. I hated it more than anything, and something inside me died. And I decided, hey, you know what? This is actually pretty interesting. And if you were interested in watching it, I mean, certainly it's all viewable for free on Hulu and such. So, I mean, you can go and laugh at the really laughably poor 80s animation and such. But there's something in there that, is, you know, thematic and, you know, universal. And people really dig watching people get the crap beat out of them.
I have to watch. I do have some reverence for the movie, especially after I saw it in Japanese with the full end theme, and I was like, wow, this is actually really sad after just watching people's heads explode for an hour and a half.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing about it is, I think it sort of harkens back to this kind of time where a lot of the stuff is just considered old hat or doesn't really get made anymore. And Gogo 13 is a phenomenon unto itself. It's been running for 40 some years, and you know, they haven't missed a week.
Yeah, I was looking at Kinokuniya the other day, and they had like, they were up to 130 some volumes of Gogo.
How many people need to be assassinated?
Right?
That's a lot.
At this point, he has taken out an entire country.
Right. I didn't watch that reboot.
The TV show?
Yeah.
I don't think anyone did. I'm not even sure.
Well, I know one guy.
I watched it. I had to watch it raw because for all the internet fan subbing hype, people didn't bother to fan sub Gogo 13 TV past couple episodes. Well, they got about halfway through it, and that's pretty decent because it was about 50 episodes long. That's 23 episodes of Gogo 13 assassinating people. It's pretty good stuff. They're actually, you know, straight-up manga adaptations for the most part. But, I mean, the Gekiga movement, as far as, if you're listening and you don't know what the Gekiga movement was in the, you know, late 60s, early 70s, gentleman named Yoshihiro Tatsumi, along with some guys like Sanpei Shirado, decided, you know what, manga needs to grow up a bit and be a little more edgy. And they started this this movement of comics that are slowly but surely being released in America in English by Drawn and Quarterly. I highly recommend the book A Drifting Life. Everyone should read that. And it sort of just chronicles like this sort of, you know, more grounded, harder-edged kind of fiction. And the movement sort of died out, but its legacy sort of carries on in these seinen works, like things like Lone Wolf and Cub, things that are, you know, the manly sort of thing, as you were talking about. That spirit is kind of, you know, still exists to this day. Unfortunately, very little of it comes out in the U.S.
Okay, well, I have to put the kibosh on this topic. Justin's falling asleep. So the other thing I wanted...
A boring person.
I forgot how much you talk about this stuff. I mean, it's the depth of what you know about it.
I know, it's like you're comparing Gogo 13 to the manga. You've read the manga?
Absolutely. Viz released 13 volumes of the manga in English.
All right.
Part of their Viz signature line. Really good editing by Carl Horn.
I didn't even know that was coming out.
It came out a while ago.
Yeah, I can imagine. But I would imagine it has since been canceled.
Oh, well, they only released the 13 because it was a release of, like, the select 13.
Best of.
Oh, yeah, it's a sort of a best of.
Carl actually picked the 13 himself for the U.S. edition. But if you want it, it's 50% off now because I'm sure nobody bought it.
Yeah, nobody bought that. So the other thing, I think this is a good time, especially with you on the show. We wanted to talk about podcasting in general because obviously we're new to this. But you've been doing it for a really long time, and people sort of consider Anime World Order and between you guys and Anime Today, I think those are the two. Is that fair to say? Those are pretty much the two big ones that sort of people point to.
I don't know. Actually, I don't think we're actually the biggest podcast. I mean, certainly
you're not. Anime Today is much bigger than you guys, but
or us.
Absolutely. Yeah. But and so is the Anime Pulse as well, because they cover what is the newest thing every week. They kind of catch you up on what happened on Bleach and Naruto and such. And so those probably have more listeners, but it's not really a game where whoever gets the most listeners wins. This isn't really something like terrestrial radio or television where ratings matter. It's not like there's any money to be made. There's no, like, advertisers curious about your click-through rate. So I never really concerned myself too much with, you know, how many people are listening. When we first started off, I was like, if 50 people listen, we'll be good.
Yeah, but there's a reason that you get invited to conventions and you get press access to things. I mean, and you're considered a sort of a figure among the press, the anime press, and certainly the blogosphere. I mean, I don't think you could downplay the fact that you have a popular show that most people I know that listen to anime podcasts listen to your show.
Oh, sorry about that.
No, go ahead. Yeah.
I said, absolutely. I mean, I think if people who are interested in listening to anime podcasts, go to iTunes and search for them. They'll find our show. Maybe they won't like our show, but they'll know it's out
there. Right. So what podcast do you listen to?
I like Dave and Joel's Fast Karate for the Gentlemen. Mm-hmm. I've known them since before I started podcasting, since we all posted on the Anime Jump message boards along with Mike Toole. Mm-hmm. So they were always good. I listen to the Ancast, believe it or not.
I've
listened to every episode ever since it started. Good stuff. I always am perpetually behind, though, on other podcasts because I don't have a very long commute. At work, I live maybe 5 or 10 minutes away from where I work, and so there's not really that much time to listen to spare podcasts. But I mean, I like the Awesome Cast. It's a OSM Cast. Hot Tears of Shame, which is sporadically released, but I love it all the same. And you know, other things that are not necessarily anime related, like I'm listening to a series of lectures on the notion of the Western as myth, as in like Western movies.
Well, that's fascinating, Daryl. But anyway, back on topic.
I'm sorry, I can't give exciting answers.
It's fine.
Like, oh, I listen to the porno podcast. Yeah.
Well, we'll get to that.
We'll get to that. So now we are obviously now contributing to this problem, but do you think on some level there are just too many of these damn things out there?
Yes and no. I mean, when we first started, there weren't very many anime podcasts at all.
Right.
And certainly none of them were talking about the kind of stuff we were talking about. Now it's a little better as far as it's not just AWO talking about weird stuff from all over the place. It's a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of podcasts stop after a few episodes after they realize how much of a hassle it is to edit the damn thing.
Well, that, and it's not like they don't necessarily have a means to build an audience. Because it's no fun doing this if you're just talking into a void.
Well, I think, you know, you're going to be talking into a void for a while if nobody knows you're out there. I think if my advice to anyone who wants to do this is to interact with other people who already are doing it.
Right.
And then people will know, hey, you're there. And granted, maybe the only people who listen to podcasts are other podcasters, but, you know, word of mouth. That's the way to do it.
And now, and I would ask that question to lead into this other, to lead into my next question here, is that I've noticed that with podcasters, they are sort of, a lot of them sort of, I don't know if I want to say fancy themselves, but they've sort of become part of the press. And I'll sit down at an anime convention panel, and there's 15 guys, and they all have their own website or their own show, and they're all Twittering or posting about whatever news is happening. I have to, and I sort of ask myself, okay, I understand there's a long legacy and tradition of enthusiast press. There's a whole lot of people here who are quote-unquote reporting on the event. Do we need this much press for this event? And the podcasters have sort of come in and become part of that. I mean, do you just think, like, it's too much? Like, it winds up being a lot of these, and I hate to say it, some of these podcasts wind up just being white noise.
I think that maybe there's a little too much emphasis on the same coverage of the same events.
Yep, I would agree.
I mean, I think most anime cons don't really have that much going on. I mean, there are parties and they're fun to go to, but there's really not a whole lot there to report to people that don't go.
Yeah, for example, I went to Otakon, and I am a podcaster, but I didn't sit in on the industry panels and live blog, like the latest news announcement, because I can read ANN for that. So
indeed you can.
Indeed you can, and I think most people choose to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But my Otakon coverage is more personal. It's more like, here's what I did, here's what happened, you know, as far as live programming, panels, events, things that may not necessarily be hot industry news, but maybe someone's interested in hearing about it. Our latest episode is an interview with a bunch of old-timers, guys from the 1960s who grew up with anime as it came on the scene. And they have stories that you're not going to read on a website, that you're not going to see anywhere else because they don't know how to use a computer or blog or what have you. And so an interview with them, I considered that this is something unique and worthwhile to get out there. Because
yeah, it's also,
something
I mean,
different.
And your convention coverage is unique because it's 4 hours long and it comes out 2 months after the convention's over.
That's right. Yes, because we're all terribly, terribly lazy and have no work ethic or drive.
Is that really? I know you're kidding, but
yeah,
I mean,
you have like full time jobs. This is our job.
Yeah.
Right.
That's not fair.
Anime is it's my hobby, and I think I wouldn't have it any other way. Because I just fear that if it was my job, I'd sort of become like Randy the Ram from The Wrestler, I wouldn't know how to do anything else, and I just sort of wonder, like, man, at what point should I just give up and start doing something else? Oh, but I can't do anything else.
You know, we totally read between the lines on everything we write, don't we?
Speaking to that, though, Anime World Order is a long fucking show. It's like three... Sometimes, I mean, you guys will do two-part shows. Each part is 2 hours. I think it's a barrier of entry. I listen to your show every now and then. Why is it so long?
It's a good question. I think it's basically a big violation of, like, what not to do in podcasting. I think everything is the Donnie Don'ts of podcasting as far as we're concerned. I think the ideal podcast length is about 30 to 45 minutes, like what you guys do. But there are three of us, and none of us know how to shut up. And rather than cut out things that we think would, you know, lessen the conversation, we just decide to make it seem like all of us can speak in complete sentences and leave it at that. How much editing do we do? Well, you thought you were exaggerating when you said the recordings were 4 hours long. The recordings are 4 hours long. We edit it down to 2 hours.
Oh my god. That's a lot of editing.
That is why it takes such a long time for the episodes to come out.
Holy shit.
Wow. Okay.
All right, well, normally we'd go a little bit longer with this part, but we got so many questions that I just kind of want to get to the Twitter, email, forum questions.
Absolutely. I want to hear all the questions. I fear nothing.
We got some good ones.
Well, we don't do a six-hour show, so I can't get to all of them. But let's start here. Okay. From Jimbo Slice 814. In honor of Daryl being on the show, what is the best, worst show you have ever seen? Odin and MD Guys don't count.
It's got to be Mad Bull 34. Yeah, I think that's shocking. Really just the craziest, most, like, what the hell were they thinking by making this cartoon? And I really think someone's dropping the ball by not licensing that and saying it's a comedy.
Right.
I think they could make some money if they said it was a joke,
right,
even though it's not a joke.
Justin?
Worst.
Best worst. Like
the best worst.
Worst. Ironically good.
I gotta go with another one.
All right, Daryl. Justin, go on.
I gotta go with another one that'll make you roll your eyes, Zach. Garzy's Wing.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Garzy's Wing is hilariously ridiculous. One guy I know got Yoshiyuki Tamino to sign Garzy's Wing.
Oh yeah, he told me that at the New York Anime Fest panel. I apparently he showed it to Tomino, and Tomino just started burst out laughing.
Oh yeah.
Okay, this is from Vicious Smith. Question for Daryl: what's your record for anime industry related name drops in a single podcast?
Probably, I don't really know like how to drop names in the anime industry. But I think maybe what he means is just the fact that I say the names of staff when I review things, because that's not really something that people generally consider, like who directed something, who was the writer of it. It's kind of like basic information if you're doing a movie review, but anime fans kind of gloss over it. Well, so I kind of like conscientiously throw that in there.
Considering you work in an industry that rarely translates the production credits on the stuff that they're putting out, I don't think that's totally unreasonable. Okay, next up from Bradley C. Meek. Guy writes in every week. If video killed the podcasting star, where are the hell's all the good anime video casts? I'm just going to say his premise is flawed. It didn't. Video podcast did not take off at all.
No.
nobody wants to watch a radio show. So there aren't any good ones because nobody wants them. That would be my answer.
That and they're a lot of work.
Editing video is
quite difficult to do. I think
it's so hard
video
to make
podcasts
it look
via like YouTube or something. I think maybe those could work, but just a lot of work. So,
a lot of people have tried, and a lot of people have emailed me to try to get us involved with them. And then I look on YouTube, and they're lucky to break 100 views. Most of them, it's just there's nobody wants them, and it's really hard to make them look good. And frankly, you don't want to see most of us.
Yeah. Okay, up next, again from Bradley. Is it productive for members of the enthusiast press to be brash, condescending, or caustic towards fans of anime or anime that they don't like? And he wants to make it clear he's not trying to criticize because he's done the same thing itself, but he wants to know if it's better to be super tactful or just be blunt.
I don't know how to be super tactful, so I really don't know.
Yeah, I think tactful is kind of boring. Honestly, like, I would say we're all kind of guilty of taking it too far. Like, you will always step out of line a little bit if you allow yourself to be blunt and honest, But a lot of the reason most of us have an audience is because people like it when we're blunt and honest. They want that.
Yeah, I was talking about this, you know, just about a day or two ago, that the notion of civil discourse should be the way you go about eliciting a discussion, but it doesn't get people to tune in. People want to see the crazy screaming guy with the tinfoil hat and the blackboard, you know, doing something crazy on the TV, rather than the well-informed, reasoned argument. And I am aware of that. I'm not going to say that I'm necessarily a crazed pundit, but other people might.
Well, I would argue that I don't think it's not a show. We're not putting this on. This is my personality. This is how I talk.
Yeah.
This is how I talk about my work. It's how you talk. I mean, you're just being yourself, right?
Yeah, I don't really stand anything to gain from putting on an aura or a persona. I don't really have a on and off switch as far as, oh, I better say this for the internet. Doesn't really work that way.
Although I will say this, my family and friends would probably say that I am not quite as much of a dick as I sometimes come across in the anime world. But other than that, yeah. Okay, here we go from Anime 3000, who has a show that Daryl and I have both been on, and you've been on his show.
I have too. It's a good show.
What advice or warning would you give a blogger that's looking to get into podcasting?
My number one is know when you're being boring.
Yes, that's good advice. Know when you're being dull.
Have a very sensitive meter as to when people are starting to tune out.
Daryl?
Yeah, I know when I'm being boring, and I sort of just ignore it and go for it anyway. But I think the advice is just to prepare beforehand. Take notes. Don't be afraid to read off note. Don't, like, read word for word, but take notes so you can look at something, because no one wants to hear someone go, and then this, hold on, let me check Wikipedia. For example, I never heard of the Anime News Network in my life until this podcast. And so, you know, I said, oh, well, what's the Anime News Network? And I went to EncyclopediaDramatica.com. You know, and as a, you know, bunch of worthless articles no one gives a shit about except for Reviews and Answer Man. It's like, okay, great. Now I know what the Anime News Network is. And so that, like, it doesn't hurt. You can always make yourself sound smarter through editing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I edit this show and better for it.
I'm very grateful he edits the show because I'm normally a stuttering, stammering moron.
Likewise.
Okay, from Aaron Sursize. That's a clever name. You said in passing for Daryl that you don't listen to real music. What are some of your favorite anime openings and endings, old and new? And be brief.
Oh, sure, I can be brief. Not really hard. I like Mio. I like Yoko Kanno. Real simple stuff. Joey Saishi, you know, stuff like that. Nothing too controversial or weird as far as my tastes go. I really like Kenji Kawai. I've got the Pat Labor soundtracks. Bubblegum Crisis, too. Or the original Bubblegum Crisis.
So by real music, you just don't listen to anything that's not related to anime? Is that...
Well, it's not related to anime. It's that when I listen to music, I want some sort of visual to associate it with. So I listen to, you know, music that I heard during a scene in a movie, for example, or during a TV show. Soundtracks, that's right. Scores.
I can relate to that. I have a lot of just random songs from various places, mostly anime and TV shows and movies.
Okay, up next, from Shintaku, who also writes in a lot. Do you think Japan will get out of this Mo Fujoshi slump that they're in, since everything a little bit different seems to bomb?
Difficult to answer. I think it's not an easy thing for them to get out of. There's not really an impetus to it. It's sort of like the Marvel DC situation here in America. I mean, they could diversify and release things other than superhero stuff, but they've, over several years, catered to a direct market that really wants to see this specific thing and nothing else.
At the same time, you know, the longer they do this, the more they damn themselves to a niche audience. I mean, they're never going to get mainstream by hinting at fog-covered, you know, 13-year-old camel toe. They're just not.
Right.
You know, that's...
Well, it's true. I mean, and that niche audience becomes increasingly splintered over time. It gradually gets smaller. You have to aim wide at least some of the time. I'm not saying that you have to just stop making Moe Fujoshi type stuff entirely, but if there's 60 shows out this season and 50 of them are that, maybe they should balance it up a little bit. Maybe they should have, you know, a percentage of it that's kind of small, that's like really super niche, and a couple of things at least tried to grab for something. I mean, the big anime titles of the past that were big, Yamato, Tomorrow's Joe, Star of the Giants, these are shows a lot of people watched, not just otaku.
Yep.
Okay, from Byreal, Why would Funimation relicense Initial D when it's proven to be unpopular in the States? I don't think it is proven to be unpopular in the States. As a matter of fact, I remember it doing pretty well for Tokyo Pop when it came out.
It did pretty well, and honestly, no one who likes dubs has been able to give it a good shot because that old dub was so laughably terrible.
Yeah, I mean, people like cars in America. They like street racing. Those Vin Diesel movies make money. Well, those arcade games, people still play them if an arcade exists near you. Which
they're still making Too Fast, Too Furious movies.
Plus, if you go to a retailer and you say, okay, I've got this show and it's Wide-Eyed Moe Girls, and then I have this show and it's a Japanese racing car, they're going to say, I'll put that one on the shelf, the race car, because somebody might buy that.
Right.
Plus the Eurobeat soundtrack and all that stuff. Ignore the PlayStation caliber cutscene for the car animation.
Yeah, it looks a little dated.
Yeah, that's true. Although I can't wait for that to come out because I secretly loved all that really, really cheeseball music that they had.
I not so secretly love it.
You have to secretly love it. You should openly enjoy it.
I let my free flag fly. You can tell Zach.
I have guilty pleasures, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
I have a fair amount of shame. Crap, Zach.
I do. I do openly enjoy crap. Hey. I openly admit to watching The Hills, so don't give me that. Okay. Actually, I did want to add another thing. There was a fan outrage when Funimation announced this license.
Really?
Because they announced Initial D, which, quote-unquote, nobody likes, because they're not thinking outside of their little otaku box. And it's like, well, why didn't you license whatever Moe show they wanted? I think that's stupid to get mad at a company for licensing something you don't personally enjoy. That's dumb.
You know,
I can understand it. I can respect the getting mad at it because in a war, there's, limited resources. Only a few things can get licensed. And so if you license this, it can be interpreted as you license this at the expense of licensing the other thing.
You know what? Honestly, Funimation, should get a total get-out-of-jail-free card on any broad-ranging show, any show that might have mass appeal, because they licensed fucking Strike Witches. They're putting out the uncensored version.
Well, that's why they should actually be strung up.
They're putting out the uncensored version of Strike Witches. So don't give them shit about Initial D, please.
Yeah, not only that, but, the biggest seller that Funimation has had in the last couple of years is
World's Strongest... Afro Samurai, isn't it?
Well, aside from Afro Samurai, is World's Strongest Fighter Kenichi.
Right. That's the biggest title.
That's a show that utterly died in the fan scene. Utterly died. And it is a market beyond the, same 200 guys that post on all the forums constantly. Mm-hmm. That is not where the market is. And they might talk the loudest, they might have the most opinions to throw around on the internet, but they're not representative of who is actually buying the stuff.
Yeah,
right. I mean, I talked about on my show once, I said, what was one of the best-selling anime titles of the year? And I said, we looked at the list and it was like things like Karas, The Prophecy, Straight Jacket, things that you're not going to hear people talk about online because, it doesn't appeal to their hardcore nerd interests, but they are, solid action pieces that are sort of more like what I'm talking about.
Right.
Yeah. So, anyway. So moving on here. Got a bunch of annoying questions for Daryl.
No, ask, I fear nothing.
All right. Yeah, but they're all trying to be funny. God damn it. Okay.
And failing, apparently.
Yeah. From Joey Snack Pants, would Daryl punch a kitten in the face to... You know what?
No, wait.
This is my show. Fuck this shit. I'm moving on to real questions.
I asked that question. He runs a convention here, and he made the tactical decision to have me judge a cosplay beauty pageant. And I asked one of the contestants, would you punch a kitten in the face to end world hunger? And so that's why he's asking that question, because I asked somebody that question.
Well, keep your fucking in-jokes out of my show. Okay, from Spark That Bled, I will ask this one. Daryl, is it true that watching any anime which have females who aren't raped or helpless makes you break out in a rash?
Now, wait a second. I tend to avoid the shows where girls are raped or helpless. So unless I'm always in a rash all the time,
Justin's
I question
losing his
the
mind.
Fundamentals of this line of inquiry.
Okay. Okay, here's a serious one. Question from Donnie D. We got this in over email. I don't watch very many subs and avoid fan subs altogether, but I always see people talk about how fan subs do a better job translating. My question is, are the illegal subs more accurate? Should I assume all these people who tout fan subs as superior actually know Japanese? I can't imagine someone would make such a claim without knowing the language. Oh, they would.
Oh, they make that claim all the time. People just seem to assume that because it's the fan translation, it's the real one. No. Professionals probably know Japanese better.
There is no quality control in fan subs. That's the thing. And although the American ones tend to be for a wider, or the official ones tend to be for a wider audience, so they might not leave the honorifics in there, or they might, you know, actually translate Oni-san instead of, you know, leave it in Japanese with a cultural note at the top. For the most part, there are probably better. There are exceptions. There are some really good fan translators, but not the rule.
Okay.
Yeah, I think maybe people get sort of taken in by the fancy presentation, the typesetting and such,
yeah,
compared to some of the kind of bad subtitling that I've seen on, you know, Funimation DVDs, that white subtitles, slightly italicized, no border, I can't read the damn thing. And whereas, you know, a lot of fan subbers now, it's not really the old Tomodachi crazy serif crap of the 90s.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's readable. I can read it on a monitor. I can read it on my HD TV. And so
that's
people sort of look at that and say, oh, better quality fans.
That's
not necessarily.
That's the thing. DVDs have some major technical limitations, so they can't do those things. They are.
Well, what about Blu-ray, Justin? I don't really know about Blu-ray, but I always get infuriated when I see like the really hard to read white thin subtitles on like a retail Blu-ray.
Well, it shouldn't be that bad on an HDTV, but
yeah.
Blu-ray actually can go full fan sub effects. There's just no good software tools to create those subs yet, because the format's different, they have to be converted. There have been some big developments lately as far as Blu-ray subtitling, so hopefully we'll get some good ones soon.
Okay, from the community forums, and if you're an ANN subscriber, there's a forum just for you to give us feedback on the show. From Past, he says, do any of you think anime fans look down on other anime fans who are a part of a different generation of fandom? If so, does it go both ways? Like, do classic anime enthusiasts feel the same way about new fans as those new fans probably feel about the old-timers? I'll throw it out there.
Yes.
I don't think the newbies give a shit about the old-timers.
Well, we've been dissed for being old, even though we're just, like, 30.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in my 20s, but that's old by anime fan standards. I mean, if you go to a convention, you know, the average attendee is in their mid-teens.
I don't think there's any kind of pronounced, anger or anything. I think it's just a matter of, if you don't share our opinions, shut the fuck up, just like everyone else.
Yeah, pretty much.
I would say the animosity I have is when they're screaming internet memes in a hallway in a convention center, and I'm just like, you don't know it now, but one day you'll look back and think, man, I was really an obnoxious douchebag.
So what we really object to isn't really age demographic so much as conduct. If it was a 35-year-old person doing the exact same thing, we'd be equally as annoyed.
If it was a 35-year-old person doing the same thing, I'd call the police.
All right.
He's in the dealer's room selling yaoi. Next to a flag with a rainbow on it.
From the King of Hearts, also from the forums. How come, this is pretty much for Justin, how come when a company licenses a show, it's negotiated in a way that the company can't keep it forever? Why are licenses set to expire?
That's just the way it's always been. Nobody wants to give away their rights in perpetuity.
Unless it's Voltron.
Well, think of it this way. If you had a show that was really near and dear to your heart, and you signed all the rights forever for the North American market away to Central Park Media,
Harmony Gold.
Wouldn't you want to put a gun... Well, no, Central Park Media specifically. Wouldn't you want to put a gun in your mouth now? Because the rights to your show would be tied up in a bankruptcy court.
Right.
You know, you don't know what the future holds. That's why you have term limits on these things.
Okay, and finally, from Dr. Science, and I prepared you guys for this, he wants to know, what is your favorite joke? Did anyone have one?
I'm not a funny person. People say they
yes,
laugh.
Yes, you are, Daryl.
Yeah, I don't actually make jokes.
I don't have a joke per se, but there was the time I tried to do stand-up, and it was it was 2 days after the Virginia Tech school shootings, and for some reason, because I was a really, really angry high school kid, I love school shooting jokes, and no one else does.
National Guard 4, Kent State 0.
Okay.
Yeah, so I tried to do an entire set of Virginia Tech school shooting jokes 2 days after it happened and got booed off stage, so.
Okay, well, I have one, and here, play along here. Okay, here's my joke. We're going to close the show out with this. All right. Why don't rapists eat at TGI Fridays.
Why?
Well, who wants to go raping with an upset stomach?
That's a good question.
There you go.
I mean, you know, that's what I mean when I say that, you know, the rape is hilarious as a joke. Only theoretically, though. If someone's actually raped, it's no longer funny.
All right, all right.
You never want to get elected. You should name your episode Rape is Hilarious, sounds... but only as a theoretical concept.
Oh.
And then you can be like me.
Right. Oh, actually, there was actually the real final question. I forgot about this one. It seems to have been pushed out of my Twitter feed. But and I can't remember who asked it. So if you asked this, sorry to you out there. But somebody asked, what's your favorite weird, old, obscure, bad dub?
No, it wasn't that. It was asking, does Justin have any interesting or weird unreleased stuff from his days at CPM and Imagination he's at liberty to talk about?
Okay, here we go.
Yeah. So I had to prepare for this because it... Actually, I do, and now that CPM is gone, I can actually share this one. I kept an audition reel for a dub of a hentai.
Okay.
And it's bizarre. And first of all, this hentai is just the worst thing ever. It's Stepmother's Sin.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just kind of let this speak for itself.
Yusuke, take six.
I had to bleep his name because that was his real name.
Ah, that feels good. Your tits are so soft. It's so good, Mom.
Hold on, I'm taking notes.
All right,
these
so,
are some good lines.
That was one guy that was reading for the lead, who is obviously a guy that, you know, this is clearly about an incestuous relationship. I love that this one other guy actually zeroed in on the whole reason for this show existing.
It's so good, Mom.
Johnny Yong Bosch, is that you?
Nah, this is a New York dub, but,
Yusuke, what are you doing? It's okay, I'll do it myself. Thank you.
They're in the bathroom.
You mustn't, Yusuke. I'm sorry, you poor thing. You're starving for affection from your mother.
Yeah, it's a creepy, creepy show. There's, like, this whole, the dialogue is just laughable.
Did these people get the roles?
Some did, actually. oh, here's my favorite one.
My ass feels so good.
I'm like, have these people ever had sex? Do they know when...
All right, that's enough of that.
So anyway, yeah, that's my Justin show and tell for the week.
All right. Okay, I think we're about done here. Daryl, thanks for being a good sport. Thanks for being on the show. You can, everybody, go check out AnimeWorldOrder.com.
Yeah, thanks for giving it right back to us.
Yeah.
Yeah, no problem. And just to shill myself even more, you can read my articles in Otaku USA Magazine. They are all awesome.
Great.
Excellent.
Okay, thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you next week.
I know.